You are listening pretty late, and I have been down in Springfield for just less than 24 hours. Many of you have heard that there were protests in the Capitol. People were trying to get into the governor's office, and I wanted to talk to some of the folks that are actually part of the group, in particular the group that's been marching for 2 weeks. Joining me in a quiet room, we want to thank Treasurer Frericks for lending us some quiet space, because I wanted to sit down with Alfred Klinger, who has walked for 2 weeks to demonstrate, to share his opinions, his thoughts, and to say that people need help. Alfred, where are you from?
I'm from Chicago, Hyde Park.
From Hyde Park?
Yes.
Have you lived in Chicago your entire life?
Just about, except when I was in World War II and at the university in Madison.
You served in World War II?
Yes.
What branch of the military?
I was an infantry rifleman. I got a bullet in my neck, and at my feet were two of my buddies who had been machine gunned. And we had been playing poker an hour before.
Oh, my God. Where were you stationed? Where was this battle?
In Germany.
In Germany.
Germany. I was a child of 18, scared and homesick.
Were you drafted?
No, I volunteered.
You volunteered?
I was 17 and a half when I volunteered.
How long did you serve in the military?
2 years.
2 years. And you came home and then went to college?
Yes.
What did you study in school?
I pre-med and then a medical school.
So you were a doctor?
I was a I am a retired physician.
You're a retired physician? What kind of medicine did you practice?
Internal medicine and injuries, sports and occupational disabilities for 45 years.
For 45 years. Did you want to be a doctor before you joined the military when you were?
I had no idea.
You don't remember? No idea. Did some of it have to do with your time in the military to want to help?
Not particularly, but because I was a terrible student, I was mostly into sports and intellectual material did not impress me at that time.
Really?
Until I realized I had to do something worthwhile and serve the community.
That's impressive. And have you lived in Hyde Park for most of that time?
Much of that time, my practice was in Hyde Park, but then I spread out a bit.
Okay. By what do you mean you spread out a bit?
Well, I joined some orthopedists downtown.
Okay.
And then I did some work in the Cicero area, occupational work, and on the far southwest side.
Okay. Now, you have marched for 2 weeks all the way from Chicago to Springfield.
I did.
How many miles is that?
200 miles.
200 miles. And you started with the... I know that we talked to the group before they embarked on this. What brought you together with the marchers?
From the time I was in war, I realized that there's got to be a better world than war and solutions than war. And I wanted to do my best to make that so, to find ways to work with people so that they didn't hate and that they helped each other. And little by little, I became more and more political. My first major demonstration was against the execution of the Rosenbergs in 1953, when this man and woman were accused of giving the Russians the atomic secrets. And they took these two parents who had two young children and they executed them. And I wanted to protest, and I protested it. And that was my first major. There was a bit of a protest when I was in the infantry because I'm Jewish, and at that time I considered myself Orthodox. I protested going into the field on Yom Kippur. I never realized that was a protest, but I did protest, although I was frightened at the same time because I had never done that before. Nobody had ever told me how to do it or who to talk to and how to talk about it. But nevertheless, innately, I felt I had to say something.
You needed to take a stand.
I needed to take a stand.
And exactly. you were frightened about making that stand as somebody who was facing warfare. This was something that frightened you.
Warfare, resistance, going against authority, mm-hmm. all of those sort of things.
And what has that taught you in all the years that you since that when you the fear of authority has that I'm guessing that's diminished significantly.
No, there is still a fear of authority. I do not take orders easily. Because I've seen what authority can do, how it can be short-sighted and destroy people's lives. So I look very carefully at what the laws of the land are and what my duties are and who's telling me what to do and how to do it and where to do it, when to do it. And I'm very careful about that. And that's part of the whole basis of why I walked. Because there's a coldness to, even though we have a good government on paper, the people that lead the government come up short frequently. And I feel that somebody has to let them know that this is not just written words. These written words can affect the lives of many people and make them suffer and be in pain, keep them from getting an education, keep them from getting meals on wheels, keep them from getting medical care, keep them from living with dignity and worth and security when they become old and feeble. So that's my point of view.
Well, and that I would think is what drives you, regardless of your fear for authority. Because people, I love the saying that bravery is not the absence of fear. Bravery is being afraid and doing what's right anyway.
Well, I suppose I like that definition. A lot of people call soldiers heroes. Soldiers are not heroes. Many times they do what they do because they fear not doing it because of the laws of the military. And many times they don't feel they have much option when many of the young people, for instance, today that go into the service, go in because they do not feel they have an option. There's not the options of going to school and getting support and getting support in education, getting support in raising a family, getting support in finding a place to live, even food and clothing. They live on the edge, many, because our government feels it's more important to go to war and spend the billions of dollars a week mm-hmm. on useless armaments that only kill and maim and injure and destroy real estate everywhere in the world, because those in power, which General Smedley Butler of the Marines, who brought troops into the banana republics during the 20s, when he retired, says, "These are all racketeers that control me." and I'm one of their racketeers. And that's what it turns out to be. Many of our military excursions are rackets to take the resources from helpless or people that are powerless and who are desperate. They take those resources and don't give anything back. And that's a real racket. It's a criminal racket. We don't call it that. We give soldiers or generals or people in authority medals for doing it and call them brave. That's not bravery. Bravery is what you just mentioned, is doing the right things even though you're afraid to do them. That's bravery. Many of the people who are disabled or vulnerable, they're brave because they go on with their lives and they make lives for others so that they can live their lives. Those are the brave people, not the generals and admirals. That's my point of view.
And I think people would understand that someone with your perspective, having served in World War II, having taken a bullet in the neck, having your fellow soldiers fall at your feet, could understand you taking a stand as far as what it means to be a hero, and you would understand why people would continue to call you and your fellow soldiers a hero. And I want to talk about the bravery and the strength that you are exhibiting by coming to Springfield. Do you mind if we take a quick break? Because I have to go to a quick commercial.
Not at all.
I appreciate that. We are talking to Alfred Klinger, who has marched from Chicago to Springfield, 200 miles over 14 days, to join protesters and their frustration, their anger, over 2 years without a budget in the state of Illinois. And I am guessing there's a lot more than just the 2 years that retired Dr. Klinger would like to talk about as well. More after this on 720 WGN.
More with our interview. Incredible man, Alfred Klinger, has so much more to share with us. And there were a lot of people who I talked to. We'll talk to Martha Felscher on Friday as well.
You're listening Pretty Late, and I am in Treasurer Ferrick's office in the capital of Illinois, in Springfield. And joining me is Alfred Klinger, who is marched from Chicago to Springfield with the March to Springfield protesters. And it's quite a group. I know that along the way, people have been able to join you to also show their frustrations. When did you find out about this March to Springfield?
Several months ago. The executive director of Jane Addams Senior Caucus, of which I am a member, told me that we're entering a new phase about the budget. Mm-hmm. And one of the actions was going to be a march to Springfield of 200 miles. Was I interested in thinking about going? I says, count me in. Mm-hmm. Immediately. I'm in pretty good shape.
I have to say, you're in excellent shape.
And
most of us wouldn't be marching 200 miles if they're 30 years old or 40 years old or 50 years old. So may I ask how old you are?
I am 91 years old. I was born before Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic in the spirit of St. Louis. And I have lived many lifetimes, including the Great Depression of the 30s, World War II, in which I was almost killed. I lived through the Civil Rights March. I marched with Martin Luther King, 1966, in Mississippi, when he kept the polls open till past midnight, so people who up till then were afraid to even look at a registration poll were registered. And I have started nutrition programs in the grammar schools of my children for low-income people, kids. And I have practiced medicine. I practiced medicine for 45 years in the Hyde Park area as well as other parts of Chicago and the surrounding community. I was a great protester of the Vietnam War. I helped a lot of young men keep out of the service, along with other physicians. I try not to do things all by myself. It's very difficult to do things, especially politically, by yourself.
Power in numbers?
Strength in numbers, no question about it.
What have you experienced, what have you been noticing over the last couple of years during this budget impasse as it affects your community?
Well, there's people, particularly in my of my age, who have become weakened, disabled, fragile, who cannot get the services to keep them in their homes, community services, which helps them cook, clean, launder, dress, bathe. And instead, they have to look at the possibility of not being able to stay in their homes and going to a nursing home. And I might mention that the governor has some interest in nursing homes. So there may be some method in that madness of cutting budgets. I don't like to say that, but that is a possibility that we have to consider. Then there are people who need medical care, and because of the cuts in Medicaid, many of them can't do it, which is short-sighted, and I'm surprised that a businessman who's been so-called successful doesn't understand that if you cut the budgets, medical budgets of low-income people, they wind up in the emergency room, which costs 10 times as much as seeing somebody in the office. Not only that, they wait till their illnesses become complicated, so they have to go to the hospital and stay in the hospital for days, sometimes weeks. And that's extremely expensive these days. So that's short-sighted. And so why do multi-billionaires, millionaires and billionaires, why do they support those kind of cuts when they see that they're cutting the feet out from under all of us, including themselves, because we have to pay more to keep people in, to try and get people better. The same way with going to war. We kill these youngsters or maim them, bring them home. They're so maimed, they can't do anything. So we have to support them the rest of our lives. Now tell me, does that make any sense?
It does not make any sense. There's so much in this building, as I'm guessing you're going to learn in the next day, that doesn't make sense. It seems like doing the right thing should be easier, and so many people make it difficult. One of the things that has passed out of the Senate, so the House, as you know, I know there are protesters outside of the House of Representatives, where they are discussing the budget along with other pieces of legislation. They are, one of the proposals is to increase the income tax to where it was a couple years ago. We had a temporary tax increase to 5%, and they want to bring it close to that, to 4.95%. And a lot of people say that we're already taxed too much, that we shouldn't, that, you know, and a lot of legislators will say that support that, that it's about investing in people, and that if you invest in people, you invest in the future of Illinois.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's this crazy idea that taxes are awful, are poisonous. But if you look outside your window, there wouldn't be anything worthwhile if we didn't pay taxes. The streets, the lighting, the water that comes into our houses, the gas that lights our stoves, the waste that are swept away and picked up. That's all with taxes. When you don't pay taxes, you have nothing. You have nothing to rely on. You cannot depend on anything. With taxes, we take care that food is free of germs. With taxes, we make sure that what we get to eat is good enough to eat, is safe enough to eat. So that all is very important. With taxes, we put our kids through school. Why we don't realize that the schools are one of the most important institutions, because the children are our future. They are the ones that are going to create a better life for everybody with their creativity, if they are trained correctly. They themselves will be comfortable. They will be able to raise decent families. You won't get these terrible neighborhoods which have no resources, in which kids go around killing each other. There's no after-school programs. There's no music. There's no dance. There's nothing but guns and this business of supporting guns. But don't let me get into that. But I mean all of that.
I would let you get into anything you wanted to get into.
Yeah. But I mean this idea that guns are like what Moses made for us, that we, like, it's a holy thing, that it's a Second Amendment. It's holier than the Holy Grail. You know, it's ridiculous. Guns and bullets and ammunition. What do you think? The British are still coming? Who the hell is afraid of the British? Where are the British? The British are having a hell of a time themselves in their own country, let alone them coming over and attacking us. But there are people making money with out of ammunition and guns, and they don't want any other idea. They want to put fear in all of us so that we go out and buy guns and bullets. And if we get angry, we kill each other instead of settling our arguments by talking to each other. We haven't, and we don't teach people how to talk to each other, how to live with each other, how to look after each other, how to support each other. That's very important. And we have to learn, start that when the children are young. And we ourselves as adults have to have those feelings of concern for not only our families, but our neighbors, our relatives, neighborhoods, our communities. That's my thoughts. Anyhow, the thing is that my focus is on shaking loose the millionaires and billionaires who are freeloading on us, who are soaking us, and don't want to give up a dime. They'd rather have 6, 8, 10 high-class cars, Mercedes-Benz, Alfa Romeros on their driveways, in their garages, than to give a woman a free meal on wheels who is trying to stay in her house. Well, I want to tax them for what they can. In my day, which got me through school, the GI Bill, and got me through medical school, because my family was poor, they would never have been able to support me. In my day, the rich were taxed 75, sometimes as much as 90%. That money came to people like me so we could improve our lives. I was able also to buy a house for 4% interest, with 4%, even though I didn't have a dime. All of that helped us. Those taxes on the wealthy came back to people who needed it, who could become creative in their living, in the time of their lives, so that they could give back to the community. And I gave back 45 years to my community as a result of my training.
As a doctor.
As a doctor.
And that's, it's so hard because we have, because when the word taxes is thrown out there, people immediately, you know, want to hold on to what they have. And they also, and then, so the governor's point is that the reasoning behind not increasing taxes for the corporations and for millionaires, because there was a millionaire's tax that was proposed. And the idea was, well, then the, you know, the millionaires will move from Illinois. They will take their jobs somewhere else.
My view on that, millionaires or those who own factories and industry, we are giving them roads, railroads, lights, electricity, gas. We are picking up their garbage. We are giving them police and fire protection. We're giving them all of that, plus the most important things, we're giving them you and me, the human resources that help them do the things that they want to do. And they are turning their backs on us. They say that we are the ones that we're making jobs. All right, who can argue with that? But by God, they wouldn't be able to make jobs without the rest of us. So they get this all way out of proportion. Their views of where is the beginning and where is the middle and where is the end is distorted.
And that's the thing, is that everyone's got blame, right? Is that they're blaming the corporations, or they're blaming the governor, or they're blaming Speaker Madigan. A lot of people believe that Speaker Madigan has too much power, and that he's caused this impasse. Have you been following the story?
You can't help but follow the story if you're doing any kind of reading.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Well, I think that Speaker Madigan is right in standing fast up to a point. I think he's been in an awful long time. I think any person in legislative office needs to be curtailed after a certain number of years. But that's not the main problem. The main problem, as I see, is that the governor, who thinks he has been successful in business, although I don't know the details of it, and if when I look at Trump, the way he conducts business, I have to question how they came to their success, but I don't even want to go into that. All I want to say is that they are short-sighted when they don't see what their cutting of budgets does to ordinary people. It makes them even more vulnerable than they have been. It injures them so that they cannot function. And the governor came in with a fixed regimen of what he wanted. That is not, government is not business. Government is for the people. Government helps people reach their full potential, or should. But Mr. Governor is saying, this is the way I became successful in business, and this is the way it's got to be successful in government. And he's made the wrong interpretation. And he should not be in the position that he is, using the methods of his business the way he is attempting to.
The way in which people look at this is that, you know, well, politicians, they get cynical, they get apathetic. A lot of people, did you know that for the gubernatorial race that chose Governor Rauner, framework for the candidate. Only 16% of registered voters in the state of Illinois even came to the polls.
Yeah.
Which means that perhaps maybe 3 or 4% of the voting population in Illinois even chose Governor Rauner to be the candidate to be on the ballot. How frustrating is it when you find out that people, they hear this story about the budget impasse, or they hear all the campaigning, and they tune it out. What do you want to tell those folks?
You hit on a very sore point. Yes, we, the people, are at fault because we do not feel that our government is worth voting for, that we should participate in the business of democracy. Democracy is like a marriage. If you don't work at a marriage, it's going to fall apart. Democracy has to be worked day in and day out. And one of the big important parts of a democracy is voting. Voting your opinion about a candidate, picking a candidate, voting on the candidate, up or down. And if you don't like that candidate, get another one. Sure, it's hard work. And sure, you want to go to the movies. And sure, you want to see your television, Chazarai. But you have to do it. If you want a good government, you have to stay at it. Just like if you want a good marriage, you and your spouse may be angry with each other, but if they stay angry, it's not going to work. But when it does work, it's one of the better kinds of relationships that there is, particularly if you have children. And this, of course, affects children. Well, if we don't vote, it affects many things. We wind up with only a minority of the people picking the candidate. That's why we get such bad leaders. We need to, all of us, participate in the vote. And if we don't like the candidates, we need to rise up and say we don't like the candidates and pick somebody we do like, and for the right reasons, of course. Yeah.
Alfred, it has been an absolute honor. I've kept you from the protest for almost a half an hour, and I don't want to take more of your time. I know that you've really done so much by showing up for your entire life. It sounds like that's the key, is to keep showing up, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. You have to be persistent. You have to be persistent. Just the same way you have to be persistent in taking care of yourself. Don't depend on doctors and hospitals. I can say this after 45 years of practice. The doctors and hospitals can help you only so much. But if you don't take care of yourself, you're in trouble. That's why the cost of medical care is so high. We depend too much on technology, on the doctors saving us, the nurses saving us, and we can't do that. We must take care of ourselves. So I have a paradigm of sickness and wellness. It's too bad I don't have it here to show you.
Well, I'm going to ask you to come into the studio if you want to stay up late with us.
Oh, definitely. With you particularly.
Thank you so much. We have so much more to learn from you. I think that you're an inspiration. If anybody doubts for a moment how important this is, I think listening to you, hearing your insight, your perspective is something that I want to take a moment and hopefully introduce you to some of the legislators personally.
Sure.
If you wouldn't mind. So let's go do that. I want to thank everybody who joined us. I won't have a chance to get to all the questions or comments, but we've been talking to Alfred Klinger, who lives in Hyde Park. Here's some of the comments. Tanya says, I love Alfred. If you don't vote, you you don't have the right to say your piece. When you vote, you can save me a spot if you don't say it because I don't want to hear it. So there's a lot of people have been joining the conversation.
Wow.
So I want to thank everybody. We're going to head into the Capitol and tune in tonight for the full interview. I told you before we started the Facebook Live. Thank you, everybody. Bye, Alfred.
Bye.
All right. You're listening Pretty Late. More after this on 720 WGN.